everyone, and welcome to the next edition of the VTX podcast. Here at the Veterinary Thought Exchange, we like to start by asking, what are you thinking? And this week, we're going to be thinking and chatting with the amazing Amelia. Now, we are excited to chat to Amelia for so many reasons, but actually also because we are recording and releasing this episode as part of Vet Nurse Awareness Month in 2025, where one of the themes of the month is Shine Bright Like a Diamond. And we certainly demonstrate, I think, why Amelia truly does shine bright like a diamond in our conversation today. So we are absolutely thrilled for her to be joining us. Just a reminder that we have our chats with our amazing guests, and we have now separated our clinical segments into other shorter episodes. But actually, Amelia is joining us for our clinical episode this month too, where we're going to be talking about whether honey really does heal wounds. So I hope you enjoy the conversation with Amelia today, and then I hope you can join us for our conversation all about honey. And what else? Bee wings in honey, can we talk about?
Yeah, it gets a bit gross.
Okay, but I really, really hope you can join us for that. And a warm welcome, as always, to my wonderful friend and podcast producer, Karen, who, as always, is joining us for the episode today. So we well and truly, though, Karen, put you off your honey and toast.
Yeah, you did, but I will hopefully get over that. It can make it a week or so.
Okay. Okay, Amelia, thanks so much for joining us on the podcast today. How exciting for you to be here. There's so much that I want to talk about, and we're kind of, I suppose, our motivation to speak to you in some way actually was to do with us being in Vet Nurse Awareness Month, and we really wanted to kind of make sure we were highlighting all the great people that we should be highlighting, particularly in that month. But we've been speaking for a while and kind of connected in different ways. So I'm just very excited to talk to you. So I wonder if you can just start by telling our listeners a little bit about who you are and maybe a little bit about your kind of veterinary journey overall, if that's okay.
Yes, thank you so much for inviting me on. And as you say, especially during Vet Nurse Awareness Month, what a time to have this conversation. Really exciting time for vet nurses. So I've been a veterinary nurse for around 17 years. I've had a really enjoyable career in veterinary medicine. So I've worked as primarily a nurse in general practice. So I'm very much flying the flag for general practice, primary care nurses. I started nursing in a hospital environment, so was exposed to lots of cases. So I think that was a fantastic place to start to really give you a broad scope of the idea of where you can take a career in nursing. But quite quickly, I realised that I was really passionate about wound management, and that has really followed through my career. I've worked in various roles, in sort of leadership roles, and also for a moment in time in the industry as well. But I've come a full circle back to nursing and teaching about wound management, because that's really what I'm passionate about. So,
and how do you work out that you, I mean, obviously wounds are, I mean, they come up all the time. I mean, I suppose wounds are a big part of, you know, veterinary medicine, but
absolutely.
I suppose, how do you decide that's interesting? You know, how do you land on that? You know, how do you get there?
So I guess for me, the interest started when I was doing my nursing qualification, and a lecturer that I had at the time, her mum was a tissue viability nurse in human healthcare, which meant that her passion came across very much in her teaching. So it was something that I think when somebody speaks about something really passionately, it draws you in, doesn't it? And it makes you a lot more interested in it. So that definitely happened with me. But at the time, I was working in a practice where nurses were very much encouraged to use their skill sets. whether there was a degree of overuse of nurses during the early stages of their career. I definitely think that that was the case. Nevertheless, that did expose me to a big range of cases. And one of the things that we frequently seen through nurse clinics was wound management cases and bandage changes, redresses. And I found very early on that I would take the dog off the owner, go back into prep for an extra pair of hands, say to the team, what should we be using on this wound? And generally the answer was, have a look on the notes, just whatever was used the last time. And then you start questioning that and you challenge, well, why are we doing that? Why are we selecting those things? And as I became a bit more interested in the subject and started asking these questions and looking into it, I really quickly learned that we didn't know. And the majority of people in the team, a big team I was working with at the time, better nurses, nobody really knew what they should be using when. And that's a theme that really has continued throughout my career. And I'm talking 17 years later. I still have these conversations frequently with vets and nurses who will use the same dressing that the last person used, or whatever it says in the clinical notes, with a lack of understanding as to why you're selecting that dressing at that phase of healing. So that's really where my passion began to learn more about it so that I could make the right choices and work with the vets because we're a team, right? We're working cohesively and collaboratively so that we are benefiting the outcome of the patients. So for me, I became really passionate about learning the most that I could about wound care so that we could provide that optimal care for our patients.
Certainly my zero experience of kind of wound management is that, I don't, I mean, I don't, I kind of remember sort of learning about those phases of wound healing with, I mean, the only word I can really remember is granulation tissue that's involved at some stage, but I don't like literally, I'm like, I'm whatever else. But I can sort of picture that lecture at vet school or whatever, but actually practically, putting that into practice, I think is, something that a lot of people will struggle with. So I think, and I love that, because you call yourself, is that right? The tissue viability, do you call yourself the tissue viability vet nurse? Is that right? Yeah.
Fitness. Yeah,
That,
and that stemmed from obviously the human
yeah.
healthcare terminology, tissue viability nurse.
And I love that tissue, that sounds so much better than, that's just quite cool, isn't it? Tissue viability. There's something quite cool about it. That sounds very, I just think that
It's
sounds,
catchy.
it's catchy, isn't it? It's cool. I really like that. So that's a
But
really,
I guess hard to remember and hard to say. I could have made everybody's lives easier by saying wound nurse, but hey,
no,
it's just how I
no,
roll.
I think tissue viability is so much sexier. Like that's,
Absolutely, absolutely.
yeah. So I think you've been, I didn't realize you'd been around for so long, for so seven. Right? So I think we've kind
Seasoned,
of
that's the word, I think, is
seasoned.
it?
Yeah, we've
Seasoned.
seasoned. Yeah, we'll have been in the profession actually sort of similar amounts of time, interestingly. But so I wanted to kind of so that's a really I think always sort of interesting reflection on time, in particularly in your professional life. And I wanted to share with people actually one of the reasons that we or a reason that we connected was that I had shared a post on Instagram. Instagram, I'm not that cool. I do have, we do share on Instagram. I'd shared something on LinkedIn, more professional, and I wanted to share what the post was, and then I wanted to maybe reflect on some of the things that the conversation that kind of sparked. So I'd shared this. It was to do with the Let Them Theory by Mel Robbins. So this is something that maybe people are kind of aware of, where Mel Robbins is this very cool lady who talks about the Let Them Theory. So I'd shared, can we just let them? The Let Them Theory suggests that we should allow others to act as they will without forcing outcomes or trying to control situations that aren't within our power. This mindset has been a game changer for me. And I said that I was looking forward to reading Mel's book, which is now out. But it raises the question, how far does this approach go, especially within the veterinary profession? Is it really that easy to let them when we're dealing with major issues like redundancies, rising costs, changing working conditions, and how staff are treated. We see them posting plenty of positive news stories, but there's less transparency about the real challenges facing us. It's becoming increasingly clear that many feel scared to speak about these changes. So while the power of letting them is real, when do we draw the line and stop letting them? One thing I've noticed is that many leaders and decision makers move from one role or a company to the next. For them, this might just be a job or a stepping stone. But for us, it's more than that. It's a lifelong career and a profession we're committed to. There often is a next for us. We're here to stay in the profession. And so do we just keep letting them? Now, there's a lot of ways that you can interpret that. And I shared that for my own sort of reasons. I wonder if you can share with us some of the biggest changes that you've seen in the veterinary profession over the last 17 years. I suppose maybe reflecting on some of the more positive things, but maybe some of the things that are more challenging. So what would you say you think, you know, particularly recently, some of the biggest challenges that have kind of come to face us within the profession?
I just want to say first off that hearing that post again really hits home. And I think it was such a fantastic way to communicate that sort of concept. And like you say, there's lots of different ways to take that let them theory. And I absolutely love the way that you communicated that. So thank you. I think it was really relevant for me at the time that you shared it. So I have been affected by redundancies within the profession, which I've been in the profession for long enough to know that that's not something that we have been exposed to in vet med in the past, is it? So it's a relatively new challenge that we're being faced with across the profession. Rightly or wrongly, because you speak to anybody in other professions, and that's quite common in most other professions. It's just, I guess, would I be right or wrong in saying that we've been fortunate that we haven't been exposed to that? But inevitably, there's been a big shift in terms of practice ownership over recent years, and the way that corporatization has changed, you know, the shift in that, and how companies are managed on a wider scale will be very different to how it was when we were primarily independent. So I think that's obviously been a big change for us, and that's been a huge challenge, just navigating those differences in practice ownership and how things are done. And I think that there are absolutely lots of positive and negatives that come with that shift. I think there's a very valid argument on both sides. And having worked for both private practice and corporate, I've seen those benefits and negatives each side. So I think in terms of the big changes and the big challenges, challenge-wise, obviously there is this retention and recruitment crisis, which we're all very much aware of at this point. And I think there's lots of factors that influence that. And I mean, one of the positives that have come in recent years is that there are, especially talking from a nursing perspective, there are now a lot more opportunities for nurses. There's much more of a structured framework in practice than there ever has been before. So there are now opportunities for nurses to progress as leaders in their own area that they're passionate about, because we know that historically there was one career trajectory, right? It was from a nursing perspective, you were a nurse, you were a deputy head nurse, you were a head nurse, then what am I going to do? And that didn't necessarily mean that it happened in that nice smooth transition either. Often we found that nurses as leaders were propelled into those roles without that experience and without that support. So I think that's a big thing that's changed as well, that we now do have a lot more support in place. There's lots of independent companies popping up to support leaders within practice. And from a corporate perspective, there's usually structures in place to support leaders there. But then the other big challenge we face, as I sort of mentioned, is retention and how do we retain staff in this ever-changing environment. And the fact that we do now have lots of other opportunities, I think, is something that we really need to lean into. And nurse utilisation is something I'm really passionate about. And I think that that goes so far and has been overlooked in the past, how practices utilise their nurses and how we, we're calling out for that recognition. It's something that we've wanted for years, protection of the title. I think it's an exciting time. I think that it has been very turbulent, but I think there's also been a lot of positive change. And I think I'm hopeful that we will continue to see that positive change with the reform of the Veterinary Surgeons Act, hopefully getting the veterinary nursing title protected and opening opportunities for nurses to do more with their skills.
And I think a lot more nurses that are really independently forging some amazing careers, like really taking ownership of just their thing and doing it their own way, you know. And I think that there's, even in this corporatized world, there definitely is a lot of room for creativity and independent movement of that. You know, I think there's a lot of scope to do your own thing too, and that's okay as well. And I think it's really challenging with that kind of argument about, because I think in many ways we could sort of be like, corporatization is terrible, you know, it's much better if we're all just independent and do, you know, doing what we want to do, whatever. And nothing is ever that binary, right? I think that's the, but I think that's my problem with some of the arguments, that no one ever talks about that kind of middle ground where you might be right, but you also might be right, and we need to find some middle ground in that kind of discussion, I suppose.
Absolutely. I think I am very much that person, and I've often felt in our industry in the past that that wasn't something that was allowed. You had to have an opinion either way because there was either evidence to back it up or that there was a reason why you believed what you believed. But I've always very passionately been on that middle ground because I think there's always two ways of looking at something. So I think that's really important, isn't it?
Yeah, and so I always excuse my ignorance with this. So this the protection of the veterinary's title, this is something that comes up all the time. I just wonder, like, I am not as educated as I should be about that topic, but just on face value, why is that, why are we still talking about this, and why has that not just been a thing? I don't understand why that's not just, why has someone not just sorted that out? Like, I don't understand why
I mean,
that's not happened.
I think Scott for Parliament, Scott for MP, because that's exactly
No,
what
you don't want
that is
that.
exactly what we need. Scott for Prime
Oh
Minister,
my
because
God, that's so terrible.
that I mean, that's been the barrier. So it has to go through those legal frameworks,
Fine.
which is very time consuming. We need to get enough signatures for it to actually get to Houses of Parliament and be a topic that's discussed, for it to then be passed as a bill. I don't know, I'm not in politics or law, but that's my kind of condensed understanding of it. But it's taken that. So we need the recognition, we need the voice, we need the conversations, and we need the general public to understand that, to then back us, to help support that, to get through to Parliament, which is, I think, where we've struggled. And we know that the past few years, what since the pandemic in 2020, there's been bigger issues, I guess, as much as, I don't want to be saying this as a vet nurse because this is a major issue for us, but there have been bigger challenges, and I think it's just been pushed back over recent years. But there's definitely a lot of drive behind it this time, and obviously it's now encompassed with a bigger topic with the reform of the Veterinary Surgeons Act. So whereas before we've been fighting for the veterinary nursing title to be protected on its own as a kind of lawn proposal, now that it's incorporated with a bigger proposal, hopefully we'll get the backing to make the difference and to be in a position where you can only call yourself a veterinary nurse if you're a veterinary nurse. You've done the formal training, you've passed the qualifications,
Yeah.
you're on the register of the RCVS register.
Which, yeah, does seem like a kind of no-brainer. We do have vets in Parliament now. There are two, I think, vets
Yes,
in
there
Parliament.
are.
Yeah.
Oh, are there two? I know that we've got the one, Danny.
Danny, but I think also Neil Hudson, who taught me equine stuff at vet school. I'm sure he's a Tory MP, but we won't talk about that. So,
we're fully relying on them to get this.
We're very politically neutral on this podcast, Karen, are we not? Not so much. No, we are. Okay, no, great. So talking about all things vet nurse, so we are recording and releasing this episode in Vet Nurse Awareness Month 2025. And one of the themes of Vet Nurse Awareness Month is Shine Bright Like a Diamond.
Which just makes me want to burst into song. A little Rihanna song.
Which the veterinary nursing profession didn't make up, Rihanna did. So, oh no, I don't even know. I think it was Sia that wrote that song.
What's happening?
No, I don't. We'll get that fact checked. Anyway, Shine Bright Like a Diamond. So I want you to tell me, first of all, thinking about those that shine bright like diamonds, can you tell us about a vet nurse in our profession that, in your opinion, shines bright?
Oh, how long have we got?
Like,
and does it need to be one? I mean, there are so many. I feel so proud to be a veterinary nurse when I look at all the fantastic veterinary nurses that are doing some amazing things for the profession, for pet owners. Honestly, I don't think I could name one. Can I just reel off a list of some amazing vet nurses?
Oh no, but so the only problem with doing that is if you do a big list and then you forget someone, then we're going to get feedback being like,
"What?" All right, I'll be emailing you later tonight going, "Scott, can we just add these names
add
in?
This on?" No, of course you can mention as many as you like.
Somebody that's been really inspiring for me is Claire Roberts, and she was my manager recently in a role, and she was just an absolutely inspirational nurse. She's had so much experience in different areas, but her main goal, I guess, was to promote nurse utilization and to really empower nurses to use their skills and to be recognized. And I've just found her really inspiring. And not only that, she's just a fantastic person. And I think that goes a long way, doesn't it? You know, we work in a profession where it is inevitably filled with challenges. You know, we've got multiple emergencies come in. We've got a massive consult list, lots of ops to be done. Everybody's really stressed. The clients might be getting, you know, quite irate about certain things. And then, you know, everybody's, we work in a highly stressed environment. And I think just being a nice person goes such a long way, which sounds so fluffy, but I think it's so important that we can just communicate with each other in the right way and support each other and lift each other up. And that's something that I'm really passionate about. And she absolutely does that. But there's also so many other fantastic vet nurses doing amazing things for our profession at the minute, and also doing just that, lifting each other up and cheerleading for each other. So I'm really excited about this year. I mean, I've had a really exciting year as it is, and there's so many other nurses, as you say, doing things to empower nurses and teach the wider profession, which is fantastic.
So then I want you to tell me, which no, I'm sure no one likes to talk about themselves in this sort of way, but so I want you to then tell me how you have shone bright like a diamond. Tell me something that you feel particularly proud of in your own career.
I think that my passion has been wound management, and I think the biggest positive influence that I'd like to think that I've had in cases in practice has been to just improve that patient experience and to improve patient outcomes, so that we are using the right products at the right time, our knowledge is there, and we can support the owners through that. So I think that's probably something that I'm really proud of, because any practice that I've worked in, any role I've worked in, matter of fact, regardless of whether it's been in clinic or not, I've managed to hijack some aspect of the role into wound management, so that I can help to support veterinary teams and teach them about wound management, so that we can improve the outcomes for our patients. So I think that's something that I'm really proud of, that I would like to think that by sharing that knowledge, it's improved patient outcomes in terms of wound management.
And if you if you had the ability in Vet Nurse Awareness Month to, you know, wave a magic wand and change one thing about the profession right now, something that you think would be most impactful for the wider profession right now, what would that be? What one thing would you change?
I think this is a really tricky one, because I think that there are lots of things that could change that would overall have such a positive impact on the profession. For me, I think having really clear nurse frameworks across the board would really propel the profession. And I'm very aware that it's complex because there are different practices working very differently. But I think some kind of standardized approach to a nurse framework would really help us as a profession, mm-hmm. because everything ties into that. The skill sets that you're able to use, dependent on where you sit within that framework, it helps us to educate each other and to develop skill sets in different areas, whether that means that you want to progress in a clinical perspective and you want to develop those skills further, whether you do want to move on to the more managerial and leadership route. There's a very then defined clear pathway for you to do that, which I think would really help us across the board. There are certainly practices that are doing that really well, and there are practices that aren't doing that so well. And I think it would help the nurses in those practices have a voice, because there is a bit of a framework of how we should and how we could be organising our teams, so that it really opens doors for nurses that wouldn't have had doors open before. And I think that nicely feeds into really transparent pay bands, which would be huge for us. But again, a really complex thing to tackle, because there are so many differences between different practices. But I think that then does create that opportunity to make some kind of banding framework around that. So I think that something along those lines for me would be a huge change across the profession, and, you know, allow nurses to do a bit more.
I think it's interesting you mentioned pay, actually, because, you know, a lot of the criticism that the profession gets at the moment is to do with money, is to do with, you know, how much we're charging clients. And I know, you know, obviously the CMA are actively looking into that. But I think one of the things that you know, when you know, particularly vet nurses are kind of hearing that feedback where we're in it for the money, where we're in it for the money, historically, actually, and I hope I'm not speaking out of turn, vet nurses are being paid very poorly and are still paid very, you know, very much not in line with what you should be getting paid. And so it must be even harder, I think, as a vet nurse, where you're thinking, I'm getting all of this crap about the fact that we're overcharging. You should take a look at my paycheck. That doesn't certainly represent that. Do you know what I mean? Is that fair, do you think?
Absolutely. And, you know, that, I think that is a deep-rooted issue, isn't it? That we have always been paid below what the general public expect. I mean, the general public think, oh, you work in a vet, you're minted, you know, all of you. And that's certainly not the case across the board. But I think that, it has been an issue which is ongoing. There are more conversations happening around it now, because of, I think it's really opened the conversation with the CMA investigation. But I do think that as nurses, we do need to take a little bit of responsibility for that as well, to advocate for ourselves, to be able to have those conversations. And I think it's probably a very British thing across the board that we don't like talking about money, we don't like talking about finances, regardless of what profession you're in. But I think that being able to have those conversations is a big step in the right direction, which the CMA, I guess, has opened those doors. But I do think that we need to advocate for ourselves and be able to actually justify what we bring to the table. And that, you know, sometimes can be down to just improving communication around being able to say, right, okay, well, I've done this additional qualification, or I'm doing X amount of consults. You know, we are revenue generators as much as we've historically not been looked at that. We absolutely are when you think of the tasks nurses are carrying out day to day. And whether that's directly or indirectly, so whether it's from the consult or the procedures being carried out in the back, we absolutely are revenue generators. And we need to think of ourselves in that way to enable us to feel empowered to have those conversations and to say, well, I've upskilled in this area. I am utilising my skills in this area, which means that it's freeing up time for the vets to carry out vet-specific tasks because they are obviously generating an income in a different avenue. So I think it just opens the door for those conversations. But being confident to say, well, yeah, I've done all these years of education, I've qualified, I'm on the register, I need to do all these things every year to keep up to date and remain on the register. I'm constantly updating my skills and ensuring that we're providing the best care for our patients. Just feeling more confident to have those conversations. But I think that's something that we've lacked within our education as well, both vets and nurses. You know, I've had this conversation on numerous occasions over the years, and none of us were really taught that in our studies about how to communicate, not just in terms of advocating for yourself and, you know, knowing your worth, but also communicating costs to clients, because there's a big lack of understanding from a client perspective as to what goes in behind the scenes, why these charges are incurred. And again, I think that's actually a good thing that these investigations are taking place, because it does increase that public awareness, doesn't it, around costs. And hopefully it will mean that we are a bit more confident to have those conversations.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think, but having confidence just to ask for more money. I mean, I think the majority of pay increases that I've had in my career would not have happened if I hadn't asked for them. Like, yeah. You know, some of them happened by default, and actually my husband, who's a vet nurse, you know, for my most recent jobs, you know, he was very integral in sort of saying, no, we need to ask for this or do this, you know. And I think actually sometimes I'm really lack confidence, and he's like, no, just do this. And I'm like, oh my God, no, that's not, I can't ask this or that, you know. And actually, you know, it's funny, I suppose we need to be more confident in that, you know, ability to not necessarily negotiate, but just ask for what you think you're worth or whatever. So yeah, that's important, I think, too. I think, you know, so we talked about shining bright like a diamond, and you mentioned Claire. One of the questions we always ask all of our guests, which I can't not ask you, but I suppose gives you an opportunity to maybe mention some more people, but it's sort of a similar question. But one of the questions we always ask, and I feel like I can't not ask you, because then it would be the first time we'd not asked it. But so the question is, who inspires you?
Oh, okay. So I think that's changed a lot through my career, and I don't know whether I'm on my own with this one, but I think it very much depends what your focus is at the time as to what is really inspirational for you. Because I think in the early stages of my career, somebody who was really inspirational was probably someone in the practice that you look up to, and then you start seeing that there's a bigger profession, and then you become inspired by the person you want to be most like, or that's doing amazing things, and then your career direction might shift and you see somebody else is doing something amazing. So I think that's really shifted through my career, so not a straightforward answer. At the moment, I'm probably in a long list of people who would say that Laura Jones is a pretty inspirational nurse. Yeah. I mean, I don't know, have you got some kind of tally for how often it's been mentioned?
A lot. It,
you know, if there was a pound for every time.
We'd be rich. That's not the first time her name has come out.
She's on the leaderboard.
Yeah. She's just fantastic. I think in terms of the quality of the education she provides, the way that she has enabled herself to share that with the world, and I'm not being extreme saying this, right? I mean, this isn't just a national thing, this is an international thing. The way that she has managed to share that with so many veterinary professionals, the amount of vets I see making comments about how great her content is, not just vet nurses, and the fact that she's, you know, a business owner in her own right now as a vet nurse, and is really kind of paving the way in that. I think she's, a fantastic inspiration. But it comes back to that and a really nice person.
I
And
know.
it's just really important, isn't it? That you can just be a really nice person as well. And I think that just makes it so much better in my eyes, makes it absolutely fantastic.
She's really cool, isn't she? And everything looks good.
Oh,
Like all the stuff
absolutely.
looks good. I go on about this all the time. Like even Andy and I just sit there and go, God, look how good all this looks. Like it's just the graphics and the colors and the lighting and everything. She just
Amazing.
nailed it. She's just nailed it. And you can't help but just be so happy for her. Like there's no, just absolutely thrilled for her, And I think she's just, yeah, brilliant. It's always a good answer. That's a great answer. If you were to sort of, now reflecting on those 17 years, if you were to kind of go back to that process of, applying to do your nursing qualification, do you think, looking at the way that your career has sort of unfolded, do you think you would still make that decision? Would you still follow that path, do you think?
Absolutely. I wouldn't change a thing. And I think that that's quite empowering to say, because it's been a really rocky few years for, a number of reasons. But I think that that really shapes you as a professional, and it makes you see the profession in a different light, and gives you that exposure to the different avenues that you can go down. And I absolutely wouldn't change a thing. I still love being in clinical practice. I still love teaching wound management. I still love having the conversations around leadership with individuals, whether that means that they're in a formal leadership position or whether they're just leading themselves and leading their clinical expertise and their passion and trying to share that with the wider community. I've loved every aspect of my career. So no, is that a bit sad that I wouldn't change
No.
anything?
No, not at all. I don't think at all. No. No, not at all. In any way, that's
Actually,
just
I
fine.
would maybe change the way that I reacted to certain things in the early
Well,
days.
come on. I mean, come on now. Oh my God. I mean, yeah, I mean, but that's kind of just, is that not just life?
That's
Like when
just
you're,
growth, right? I
yeah, I
mean,
mean,
yeah.
gee, yeah, I think that's so, like, I mean, let's not start to list off the things that we would have done differently, because that would be, that's a whole, I think Karen and I are going to start another podcast just about those things.
I think that shapes you in terms of how you then
Yeah. Oh
handle
my God.
things and how you present yourself and, the things that you do in your career. I think actually it wouldn't make us, the vets and nurses we are today without have done things that were questionable or that maybe we would have handled differently. So I think that that's just growth, and it really shapes the way that you can support the wider community, I think.
I think we're all a bit ridiculous and obnoxious when we're 21. I mean, who, like,
Think you know
you
everything.
think,
You
oh my
do.
God, you do. And
Yeah.
actually, it's that kind of thing where you meet 21-year-olds now and they're really optimistic and you're like, just give it time. I mean, good for you. Yeah, be happy now. Like, oh, isn't that sweet?
Really funny actually, because I read a post by Katie Ford this morning about salt coating things, where you're just being a bit salty in that respect, and
Yeah,
that's
that's the thing. Like,
absolutely
I do.
it.
I get so. It's so. Isn't that? Yeah, I've not seen that, but I must. Like, I've had a couple of people come to me recently about, wanting to be vets, and I'm having to really dig deep sometimes and be like, yes, you do. You go for it. And I'm like, jeez, I'm just really tired. Right. Okay. So, do you see this gray hair? I used to look so young and thin. Anyway. And then veterinary medicine did this to me. Okay, no, I'm joking, really. So my final question to you, is, what do you want to be when you grow up?
Oh God. I have no idea. I would have said a few years back, probably more professional. because that's definitely one thing that I probably could work on. And then I had a good conversation actually on the Veterinary Skills podcast with Lacey Daniels recently.
Oh,
and she said that once upon a time she was told that she wasn't formal enough for a certain role. And she really differentiated between being formal and being professional. And I think that's the first time that I've gone, oh no, actually, you're completely right. So I would now change that to maybe a bit more formal than professional, because I absolutely have always been professional. Well, you know, taking aside the things we were just discussing. But I think more formal. But then actually, no, I just wouldn't be who I am with that. And I think just being down to earth and being you and being who you are is really important.
I think it's actually really exhausting trying not to be, I don't know, like, because I think I have tried quite a lot professionally or whatever to not be my, you know, and actually it's just a lot of work. It's quite hard to
and
be.
I found that I always used to, you know, on that note, when I first started speaking, doing sort of public speaking, I was very conscious about my thick, broad Welsh accent. And I would focus so much on trying to dial that down that it actually threw my thought process about what it was that I was there for, what I was trying to teach. And then I quickly realized that actually, when I'm listening to people speak, if they've got a really unusual or broad accent, I listen that bit more intently.
That's
whether
so
it's
true.
That I love it or whether I don't know what they're saying, I mean, that's irrelevant. But I think that was something that I would really kind of try to tone down. So, yeah, I think that's really relevant on that point.
I'm not just saying this. I know I've mentioned it to you in person before. I love your accent so much.
Me too.
I can't get over how much I love it. I just love it. Like, it's on. And actually, I work and live in Canada now, and one of my clients came in the other day and she was Welsh, and I literally almost like leapt across the room to hug her. Like, you know, like accents for me, sorry, this is a tangent. Accents for me are actually quite emotive, because so I've lived in Canada now for a year. I was in the airport and in Victoria, and the lady announcing the flight a few months ago was Glaswegian, and I literally leapt, and I went straight over to her and I was like, oh my god. And she, and it was, and we hugged. Yes. And then the same thing happened in the hairdryer, the barbers, this thick Glaswegian. I was like, oh my god, there's another one. And and before you know it, I'm hugging this woman that I've never met in my life, and it was all because of her accent. And I just knew it was going to be okay. And I think, no disrespect to any other accents, but I think there's a safety in Scottish or Glaswegian accent for me that I would connect to that, and the same for Welsh. So I anyway, that was a terrible aside, but I absolutely love your accent, and I think it's just such it enhances everything you're saying.
So, oh, I'm glad you think of
that's
that.
Just my opinion.
I'm glad you think of it that way.
So I think, no, I think we've got to, that's very much embrace that, you know, and that's part of our, you know, who we are. And I love that, you know, very much. So I love that. Well, listen, thanks so much for chatting today. I that was great. And what a wonderful thing for us to be. I feel so great about us doing this for, you know, during Veterinary Awareness Month. And I think you're such an amazing example of the profession and shining very brightly. So thank you very much for chatting today.
Ah, that's very kind. Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Massive thank you to Amelia for chatting today. Wonderful conversation, wonderful human being, and wonderful Welsh accent. I cannot stress that enough. So we're so grateful for her being on the podcast today. Massive thank you to all of you for listening. We really, really appreciate your support. Please do remember to give the podcast a little review. We'd love to hear your comments, and we'd love to hear suggestions of who you would like to have on the podcast and who you'd like to hear conversations with. So please do always feed that back. To learn more about VTX and what we do, then please head over to www.vtx-cpd.com. Lots of exciting CPD, and actually lots of exciting CPD coming up that involves Amelia as well. So do please check that out. Remember that Amelia will also be joining us for our next episode, which is our clinical Just a Thought episode, where we'll be talking about the benefits of honey in wound management. So please do join us for that. So big thank you to all of you, and I look forward to seeing you next time.